hello, everybody, again, and welcome back to another episode of X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
Today, we are going to talk about, you know, it's funny, Jen, I feel like it's a little bit of a repeat of a previous topic, but like, I don't know, any excuse to bitch is great. So
this is more about like the positive flip side of the bitching. That's how I see it.
Right, right. So we a few weeks ago, we did our biggest beefs. And these are kind of the things that like sort of just still bother us like eternally forever. I feel like this week we're going to be doing our top 10 fixes, which is like, you know, if we could go back and just kind of alter one little thing that might make us feel better about an episode here or there. That's what kind of what we're going for here. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's about like not necessarily dwelling on the problem, but thinking about how to solve it. Although
right.
The problem will kind of come up at the same time. But we're going to try not to talk about all of the same problems we've talked about before. We're going to try to be fresh.
Yeah, we try to do some fresh stuff and leave out all the obvious ones. But like, yeah, I feel like this is like these aren't the things that like just like keep you up at night. Terrible,
yeah.
But like these are the things that like every time you watch the episode, you're like, you know, maybe not. Like, yeah.
Some of these do keep me up at night, even though they don't seem like the things that would. Sometimes they do.
They do if I've just watched the episode and then I go to bed and I go, why?
I think sometimes everything keeps me up at night, especially things that are relatively easy fixes, which a lot of these for me are.
That's absolutely
for me. It was about like things that. Could we just have done one thing differently? Would that have changed a lot of things? Yes.
Yeah.
So
yep.
To me, those are the ones that really get to me. Some things are hard to fix, but some things are easy to fix. And the easy ones are the ones that actually bug me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because it's like it would have been so easy to do and they didn't. So that's
yeah. Why didn't you just do that? Yeah,
well,
no. I mean, I'm the same way on myself. I'm not being like overly critical compared to how I regard the world in general. I mean, I adore the X-Files. I'm very hard on myself, too. The number of times I've said to myself, if I had just done that one thing differently, things could have been so much better. So this is just how I view the world. So no love lost with the X-Files. I still love the X-Files. This is just how I think.
It's much more healthy to pick apart a show than your own life. So
it is. So this is actually really quite positive for
me. Let's do it. But before we get into our lists, Jen, we have some tweets to read, right?
We should do.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, so tweets for this week. The first one is from Slippin' Mickey's. And these will all this week be about the interview that we had with Jessica Morgan, formerly of TWOP, Television Without Pity. Mm-hmm. For those of you that listened to that episode, if you didn't, run right now and listen to it because it's awesome. So Slippin' Mickey's, hi Slippin' Mickey's, tweeted to us to say, my TWOP days were the halcyon days of my XF fandom, season 8 and 9. Those boards were so great and the site so wonderful, I ended up working there. Great episode. Thanks Slippin' Mickey's. How awesome is that?
Mm-hmm.
That Slippin' Mickey's wound up working at TWOP. That's very, very cool because that sounds like my dream job, actually. So yay for that.
Yeah, that's I actually know her. My friend Casey, shout out. She used to be a moderator as well over there.
Oh, cool. So, cool beans. All right. Shout out to all the awesome moderators on TWOP.
Yeah.
Next one from Peacenik. This was addressed to Jessica. I was a huge fan of your recaps. They got me through the dark times, season 8 and 9. You were always so real, relatable, funny, and a fan. The Mulder and Scully action figures were hilarious and should have had their own series, full stop. So true, Peacenik. I agree with you on every one of those points.
Yes, yeah, same.
Next from Officious Bystander, which I'm not sure exactly what that username means, but I really love it for some reason. Listening to this podcast episode took me back for real. I will never be as active on the internet as I was in the days of Mighty Big TV and TWOP. I hear you, Officious Bystander. this one, I don't even remember what happened here. Jen pronouncing all the letters in TWOP took me out.
I don't remember you doing that. Yeah.
But obviously I did.
Yeah.
Because saying TWOP now does feel a little weird, so maybe I have a feeling I was actually saying TWOP at the time. I really don't remember, but I'm glad to have brought about some amusement. Officious Bystander also says that Jessica was my favorite mod in the TWOP forms, or maybe I should just keep saying TWOP forms, because she interacted with us, which is great. I miss the action figures. Their dramatics got me through season 8. And, oh yeah, I love this. My favorite recap joke was about the poor guy at the FBI who had to keep making slides for Mulder despite tech advances.
That is a good point.
I'd never thought of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, because at some point, really, no one was using slides anymore, but they kept using them.
Oh, God. You know,
We wouldn't have known it was the X-Files without slides.
No, I just love how Mulder always has like a prepared slideshow for Scully. Like, no matter what, he's just like, Scully, you gotta believe me because I have slides.
They were always very well prepared.
Yeah.
The only time we saw like a little slide gaffe, as I recall, was during Bad Blood. It was like a little joke that some of the slides were in wrong.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time, they're always perfectly lined up. I mean, for those of us that were around in the days of slides, you know that slideshows never go that well.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I love the slideshows. From good golly Ms. Molly, I loved Television with OPD too. Yeah, right? And Julia Aaron said, OMG, the memories, totally. And user AllBrand7, I love the podcast as usual, and I can't wait to read all those recaps. I didn't have any idea existed. I'm so glad for your podcast and thanks for sharing those diamonds. You and I were in the same boat in the sense that I didn't know about the recaps either. And I'm also coming to them very late, and they're also a gift to me as well. So yeah, well, lots of folks listening to our podcast who remembered TWOP and remembered Jessica's recaps, which are great. And a few folks like myself just discovering them through this, which is wonderful.
I'm thrilled that so many new people found them, because I've been trying to tell people to read them, because like, seriously, if you missed out on this back at season 8 and season 9, like, I feel so bad for you watching that show at that time without these recaps to get you through it, like, seriously. Yeah. But so yeah, thanks to everybody for writing in, and I hope that people were able to find them and check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, please follow us on Twitter at XFD Podcast. Interact with us there. We love hearing from you. So thanks, guys.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Okay, guys. So fixes, Jen. What would we do if we had the power to fix the show?
Little
fixes, you know, not big fixes, you know.
Some of mine are quite big.
I know some of yours are big. you're right. Some of yours are big. But
mine run the gamut from tiny things to huge things. I just couldn't figure out which. I was like a kid in the candy store thinking about what would I do with the X-Files. So I could have done 100 things. I don't know why I came up with the 10 I did, but I did.
It's funny. We could probably come back and do a part 2 of this, because I feel like every time I'm like actually watching an episode, like I'll come up with a new one. But these are, these are ones that definitely came to the forefront of my mind when I was making this list. So I feel like that it should be a worthy list of 20 things here. I'll be very curious to hear people. If you guys tweet in at XFD Podcast, talk to us about what your beefs are. Not beefs. I use the word beefs. Fixes.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Everybody
fixes
knows.
And beefs, they go hand in hand. A beef is a beef only as long as it remains unfixed.
That's true. So let's start with you, Jen. Let's start with your number 10.
All right. My number 10 is, this probably doesn't sound that important, but lordy, it drove me crazy. Number 10, my first fix would be, tell Robert Patrick when he comes and joins the wonderful X-Files family and plays Doggett, do not attempt whatever that accent is. I don't know what he was trying to do. I'm assuming it was meant to be vaguely Southern, since that's allegedly where his character is from. It's not his real accent. Robert Patrick doesn't really talk like that. Although really, he slipped into like his regular accent more often than not. But like when he's saying like Mr. Mulder and stuff, like, what is that? I don't know what it was supposed to be. Whatever it was supposed to be was unconvincing. And I know it sounds nitpicky, but honest, literally every time he opens his mouth, it kind of still bugs me. It's like, why are you doing this, Robert Patrick? Did they make you do this? I'm sorry if they did. And it just would have been so much better if he had just been himself. He's got a great voice. He's got a great accent. Just be Robert Patrick. I don't know what you're doing. Please don't.
That's so funny, because I totally 100% disagree. I think he's so adorable. I love it. I love it. I don't know what the hell he's doing either, but I love it. It's just so Doggett. I don't know. I don't have... It's funny. I never actually had a problem with that. I always thought it was cute. And then when I saw that it was on your list, I was like, wow, that's a thing that bothers people. It didn't even occur to me. Like, that's so funny.
It'll be interesting to see how the listeners fall on this.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe a lot of them will agree with you and say that is not something you want to fix. That is perfect the way it is. I guess I get kind of it.
I never really thought of him as having an accent. I mean, I just thought it was kind of a little like a tick, like a dialogue. Like it never really bothered me. I thought it always gave him character, and it made him a little more distinguished from Scully, because I don't want to make it sound like he was, you know, trying to play himself dumber, because I don't think that's what he was doing. But he does have that sort of more home, like more down home kind of feel, like, hey, I'm just I came from being a cop. You know, I do this. I do things different. So so I don't know. I felt like it was super subtle, but it never bothered me. Never. Okay. I love Doggett with all of my heart. So I can't be mad at him.
I love him too, and I think that's why it bothers me so much. I'm most critical of the things that I love the most. And I think you're right. He was going for like something vaguely homespun, but I think it just really irks me if I can't pinpoint what an accent is supposed to be, at least. And it just drove me nuts to try to figure out what that accent was, what he was going for. For a while, I thought it was New York. For a while, I thought it was Georgia. After a while, I try to accept this is just the Doggett accent.
Yeah, it's the Doggett accent.
It still kind of bugs me sometimes. I feel like I would have enjoyed seasons 8 and 9 like 28% better if he hadn't been doing that accent.
Yikes, Jen. Wow.
Yeah. For real. This is how I am. Little things can bother me in large amounts.
But this is like a huge awakening for me, because like I always thought that you like just really liked Doggett. So it just kind of makes me sad.
I really like Doggett. Okay. Yeah, no, I do really like Doggett. If I didn't like Doggett, I wouldn't care what kind of acting.
28% though. I mean, yikes.
I know, but he's in every episode doing that accent. So it's just, I have a hard time with it. I need to work on this.
This one's definitely going
to
be a poll.
I'll try to embrace it. Definitely. Yeah. I think it should be.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you love it? Do you hate it? Did you never notice it before? And now Jen has ruined it for you. Something like that.
Well, you didn't ruin it for me, because I love Doggett. Right. And I have, like I said, I did notice it. It just never bothered me. I just, like you said,
okay,
I was always just like, oh, it's just the way Doggett talks. Okay. Like I didn't
all
really.
Right.
So, but good to know. Good to know, Jen.
I need to work on that. I'm going to try to take your positive attitude and bring it into my heart.
I wish more people would do that. But anyway.
all right, what's your number 10?
Throw in some shade. Okay, I'm moving on to number 10. My number 10 is in the episode Essence, season 8. Oh my God, Jen. So I still don't understand why Mulder hands Scully over to Krycek and says, here, take her. And then like...
Literally.
I every single time I watch that, I'm just like... What the fuck just happened? Like, seriously, like he seriously is going to try to kill you in about 10 minutes. Like, every time I watch it, it bothers me, because I'm just like, okay, I guess I can understand that, like, you're in a hurry, but, like, this is like, this is like the love of your life and your baby, and you're just gonna be like, you go with the guy that we know killed your fucking sister. I know he didn't kill her sister, but you know what I mean?
This
like,
is when they're trying to escape the FBI building with like, robot Billy Miles coming after
like
them.
Like the climax of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah. When they're in like tremendous danger, and he and Skinner get into the elevator, and Scully tries to come with them, obviously.
Right.
And like, As like, some kind of a weird diversion or something, he practically shoves her out of the elevator and into the arms of Krycek.
I guess I get in this moment. I mean, I know we all love to hate Krycek. We love to love Krycek. Like, he flips back and forth. We never really know what we're going to get. And admittedly, thus far in this episode, he's been helping them. Okay, so I can say, all right, we are in. You can give him the sort of benefit of the doubt. Like, we are in this sort of very dangerous circumstance, and. This is what bothers me, though, Jen. Exactly what we were talking about, though. How it like it makes like it's such an easy fix. There was literally no reason for her to do, for him to do that, because they're reunited in like 30 seconds.
Yeah,
so it's for no reason. Like, he could have been like, go with Skinner, or he could have been like, Krycek, go. Yes. I can't figure it out, and it drives me crazy.
If it had been Krycek and someone else, I could have lived with it. But just Scully and Krycek trying to escape the FBI building together?
Like, literally I hate using the word literally. I'm sorry. But like, okay. Alex Krycek was in talking to Skinner. And I think Skinner was present in this scene, if I recall. Maybe he wasn't.
Yeah.
Telling Skinner he wanted to kill Scully's baby. And this was like 3 or 4 episodes ago. I can't. Every time I watch it, I go, why? And I'm sorry. It's not like a beef because it's not something I think about. But every time I watch the episode, it bothers me. So that's my number 10.
It's a really, really strong number 10. And I don't know why it never quite sank into my brain while I was watching that episode, how ridiculous and stupid and kind of offensive that is.
Yeah, but all of those things.
Well, I went back and rewatched it and I'm like, holy shit, this is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, what are they doing here? And the thing that's worst about it for me is how little say Scully seems to have in the matter.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of a problem throughout the episode essence. That
agreed.
There just seems to be way too much talking about Scully with her present without her having much say. And this is like the worst example of that. Be different if there was some kind of like unspoken agreement between Scully and Mulder. Like, yes, this is the best course of action. She
right.
looks kind of like, no, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
As indeed we all are. And she doesn't seem best pleased with the idea. No. And it's like, what is she's your property to decide, but you and the three men there,
yeah.
Mulder, Skinner, and Krycek, get to decide what to do with Scully at that moment.
Yeah, it's just that irks me. Like just
the
whole idea of it, and it's just there's no reason for it.
Like, there was no reason.
And so,
I mean, if there was, because I was trying to watch it with like an eye on like, okay, what was sort of, it's obviously a terrible idea, but maybe they were compelled by some plot reason to that Mulder had to be in a certain place and Scully had to be in a certain place and Krycek had to be a certain place, but they really didn't.
No,
it
didn't.
There's just not a good enough reason.
Mulder, I mean, a lot of things about that episode bother me, but I mean, I can look past a lot of them. If Mulder had just stayed with her all the way to the car, I would have been fine. I get why she had to go off with someone else. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no reason for this fucking musical Scully. You know, like, keep her with Mulder. You don't need to bounce her around all the different men in the room. Come on.
Oh, it's like, and how much better, how much more compelling would that whole sequence have been if it had been Mulder and Scully together trying to escape danger, Mulder trying to protect his baby? That would have been great.
Yeah, totally.
But, I mean, we never had enough of Mulder and pregnant Scully together, and this was a really good opportunity to kind of make a really exciting scene with them and completely blown and really just like, what a ridiculous alternative. So totally, honestly, that is never going to stop bothering me now. This is going to be one of those ones that really, really irks me, but that's okay.
Love it.
I'm not a huge fan. I mean, I'm a fan of season 8. I've said that. I'm not a huge fan of Essence, so it's not like it's going to ruin Essence for me or anything. I prefer Existence.
Yeah, same.
But I'm not like a huge fan of that whole two-parter, to be honest. So I'm fine with it. And on the plus side, I think Krycek looks super hot in that episode. So plus.
Right. And I mean, to his credit, he does not seem to want to kill her. I mean, he does help her and he does what Mulder says,
that's
but I mean, it's just, there's just no reason for him to assume that's going to happen.
Exactly. It's still a really terrible idea. Mulder is lucky that Krycek did not kill her for reasons that no one may ever have really understood, but never know with Krycek.
Or at the very least, like, you know, fuck with her mind or do something sneaky or, you know, who knows?
It was so weird seeing him acting so normal with her, like, hey, let's just, you know, be sneaky together and I'm going to get you to the car and drive safely and all that. It's like, what is even happening right now? It was weird.
I don't know. Anyway, it's good.
Yeah, no.
We can move on, but it's
easy. But again, like you say, easy fix.
Yeah, so easy. Ugh.
Yeah,
anyway.
Totally.
All right, let's move on. You're number 9.
Okay, my number 9 is my first really quite huge one. All right, here's it. But to me, it's still an easy fix. I would not have made cigarette smoking man Mulder's father. There, boom. Because it doesn't really happen until the start of season 6. I mean, there's hints to it before that. We all kind of knew before that, but we had 5 seasons of CSM being CSM without him being in the role of Mulder's father all the time. Who cares? It just turned it into this sort of cheap melodrama. They're always, you know, people like Chris Carter are always saying, oh, it's not a soap opera. Dude, you took like the biggest soap opera trope, this idea of like the secret father. And it just seemed to me, I was a fan of CSM's character, still am to a certain degree. But they just kind of, in my opinion, they just kind of, he was never the same after they recast him as this kind of father figure, because all of a sudden his kind of really compelling evil intentions all got boiled down to, oh, it's all something weird to going on in this father-son relationship. And I understand that Chris Carter likes to write father-son stories, but he already had a really good one with Mulder and his actual father. I will never see it any other way, because, you know, William Mulder had all these, like, you know, Mulder's finding out all these things about him. He was up to some shady shit involved with Samantha and everything else. CSM is still involved in that storyline. He could still have been involved in that story. Happy for that to be. Happy for him to have played a role in Mulder's background. But we already had a compelling story about Mulder's actual father, without having to turn into, oh, CSM is his secret father. And it just kind of, it just lessened the whole, it lessened CSM's character, in my opinion. It made the whole, that whole storyline was kind of dumb. They didn't do much with CSM a lot after that. I mean, they had him around for season six most of the time, I think. And we didn't see a lot of him after season seven. And so to have really sort of like, done that in season six when you didn't even have to, it just felt a bit desperate. And if you want to have it in there in the mix as a possibility, I can live with that. But the fact that they made it, you know, a definite no, it just felt it just felt dumb. That's my compelling argument, and that's my number nine.
It just felt like, it felt kind of forced. I get that. I actually I agree with you to an extent. I think that, like, it's not really necessary to the story to, like, push it forward. But I do think that, well, first of all, again, me giving Chris Carter way more credit than most people do, I do think that he knew that was what was going on way back in, like, season three. I'm certain that he did, because of the way that they treated Tina Mulder with the husband and how they were arguing and all that was happening very early. I want to say, like, season three. So, I mean, I don't think this was something that he just came up with. Like, I think that that was definitely the plan. And I think it adds to the idea that he has been keeping him alive all these years for that reason. And so I think it adds to that in a weird sort of paternal way. He wants to protect him. I kind of like the idea that we find out that he's his father only when he has to reveal it, because Mulder can read his mind. So I like all that. I think that's pretty cool. I guess my only beef with it, and where I kind of agree with you, is that, like, they didn't necessarily really take it anywhere, because they kind of turn it around on you. Like, I thought CSM was so compelling until the final scene of The Truth, where he just turned into a monster. Like, he literally was like, I've kept you alive this entire time, but you know what? Now I just want to see you die. Like, literally, that's kind of what he says. And it's cool. You know, when you think about that being the finale, and, like, he's finally, like, laying down his final card, and we're like, oh, wow, he really was really evil this entire time. Sure, that's, like, the side that Chris Carter chose in that episode. We all know he loves to sort of, you know, dick us around and change his mind later. And then they turn it into this whole father-son thing into the revival that we, you know, we do not need to speak that's name. That's revival's name. But I don't know. I don't. It doesn't bother me. I think it's a little melodramatic at times, but I think it adds to the drama. So it doesn't. So I don't think I would change that. I mean, I might have changed the way they did some things, but I don't think I would have changed him being the father. Just my thoughts. But I see where you're coming from, because I don't think it necessarily added a lot to the story.
Yeah. It's partly, I think, coming from the fact that I was such a big CSM fan, and it just seems like once they kind of really made it, like, so unambiguous that he was Mulder's father, I'd been quite happy with him being sort of ambiguously possibly Mulder's father. That was kind of cool. But we talk a lot about ambiguity on The X-Files, and this is an example where ambiguity was so much better than this revelation, because after the revelation, I just felt like his whole story just kind of flattened out.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I think when you take away the mystery of the smoking man, he's not as compelling. Yeah. He's not as scary. So I, in that regard, I agree with you.
Yeah. And that was kind of a big part of his mystery taken away. So R.I.P. mysterious CSM, as far as I'm concerned. I loved him so much in the first five seasons and so little by the end. What is your number nine, Annie?
All right, my number nine is actually super little and dumb, and I don't even know who else cares about this. But, like, speaking of The Truth, because we were just talking about The Truth. Okay, this bothers me every single time. Okay, the part where, like, Mulder's seeing all the ghosts, you know, like, throughout the whole episode.
right.
Then he sees Mr. X. Okay, like, I'm watching the episode, and I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, it's Mr. X. Yes.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I have something for you, some information or whatever. And then he literally hands him a piece of paper with the address of Marina Covarrubias. I'm like, why are ghosts handing you pieces of paper? This is not cool. You shouldn't be. Ghosts don't write, okay? They can't pick up pens. They can't write notes on pieces of paper. Anyway, this drives me up the wall because I was just like, it would have been so easy for him to just say.
Yes.
They don't even have to say anything. He could have been like, I have something for you. And then they literally like just cut to like Marita walking into the, like,
right.
why do they have to do the note? Like this note, sorry. It just drives me up the wall. Anyway, Mr. X writing Mulder a note in the jail cell for no fucking reason at all. Number nine. Anyway.
You are so right about that though. I mean, I remember that irking me at the time too. And because it's pretty well established that there are ghosts throughout this episode. It's kind of an interesting sort of subplot, an interesting theme. And Mr. X comes back, cool, he's dead, and here he is. And then next, he's like handing a note, and for a second, I'm like, so is he not dead now?
It's yes! Just,
anything that grinds the sort of storyline to a halt in your mind while you try to figure out what's going on, and not because that was the intention of that scene, but just because of how poorly it worked out, it's a bad thing. I mean, why are you messing around? Because you said, it's so easily fixed. Why would it be written down? Like you say, if they wanted to keep it a mystery about what the information he was giving Mulder, they could have just cut as soon as he said, I have something for you. And then we could kind of piece together later on, he probably told Mulder how to find Marita. But I mean, I'm also slightly bothered by, like, how does he know? Like, does he have like some sort of special access to like a ghost phone book that other people don't? Like,
it's just, the whole thing is so stupid. Like, I mean, seriously, it just seemed like an excuse to get Mr. X in there. Whereas like the things that he says to him in that jail cell are enough. Like it's
and
enough.
They're quite cool. It's a cool scene, you know, talking about like the truth, the nature of the truth. And
the men not,
it's
like,
really cool stuff.
Yeah. And how they won't listen and how like they're above the law and all this stuff. And like it's so perfect for Mr. X to be saying that.
Yeah,
but I'm just,
it's exactly right.
All I'm all I'm thinking about is like ghost Mr. X, like, you know, like invisible, writing a little note. Like, where's my pen? Damn it. Where'd my pen go? Like, no.
I need my ghost pen and my ghost paper. Where did I put them?
Anyway, oh my God. Again,
it really confuses what's going on with the ghosts in that in that episode. Because, I mean, like I say, it was kind of an interesting element to the episode, but I was so confused at that point, and so needlessly so. I mean, it's such a mundane piece of information to be handing him on a piece of paper. If they had to have paper, couldn't it have said something really cool on it, like a single word that was a code word for something?
What,
or
like
something
a fight
really
the
cool?
future?
Something compelling, but no, name and address. It's like the most mundane thing you could possibly have written down.
Like he could have just like, Doggett could have gone to the phone book. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so dumb.
I mean,
and you know what? I understand if they're trying to kind of, like you said earlier, maintain some sort of ambiguity here. Like, okay, is he a ghost? Is he really there? And I'm like, no, there is a 0% chance that any of these people are not ghosts. Like, they're ghosts. Like,
they're ghosts.
So
can
stop
we just
trying
make them
to,
ghosts?
Like, do we really need one more thing to wonder about in this? I don't know. It was just really annoying. Oh, yeah.
Hi, Apollo. Mm-hmm. And the idea of them being ghosts was a cool idea. We don't have to screw around with that. They can just be ghosts. And can we just enjoy them as ghosts?
Exactly.
I enjoyed them as ghosts. And there was like 100 ways they could have gotten Marita's information. It didn't have to come from X. It's not like they found her in a prison in Russia. It was just an address in like Annapolis or something.
Bizarre.
Not necessary and dumb. Yeah. So yeah, totally. 100% agree with you about that one. Totally.
Yay. What's your number nine?
Oh,
wait, you already did number nine?
We're on to eight.
We're on to eight.
Eight. Here's my number eight. Okay, this is from the revival, but it's just a very brief moment. It's a single line, but it really bugs me, and I cannot figure out what the hell they were even thinking putting it in there. And that's when Mulder and Scully are on their way to Sanjay, the scientist's house.
Oh, Founder's Mutation, secret, right?
In Founder's Mutation, thank you. And it turns out this fellow Sanjay had a secret apartment and like a secret life because he was a closeted gay man. And on the way there, Scully says, it's hard to imagine in 2016 that Sanjay had to keep his lifestyle preferences a secret. Lifestyle preferences? Are you serious right now? Like, yikes. I get that they are trying to make some kind of a gay positive sentiment, I guess, with this whole, oh, it's just so awful. Gay people have to be in the closet. I'm like, okay, fine, you tried. But then you're using this language, lifestyle preferences, which is so dated and honestly homophobic. And yeah. It is not working with that sentiment. It bothers me. It makes me think less of Scully as a character, to be honest.
It makes me cringe. And I'm actually really surprised that Jillian, like, maybe she did say something, but that she would have not said something and been like, honestly, you know, maybe we changed this line. I don't know. I'm not laying that at her feet. She didn't write the episode.
But honestly, it does kind of like, it makes everyone look bad. It makes everyone look bad who's involved in any way. And it doesn't make a whole lot of impact in the storyline. I don't know why they even bring it up because they didn't even like engage with the issue. Because the next thing that Mulder says is something like, well, being gay wasn't his only secret. And then they're just off on another topic. Right. So it's not it like they were trying to really explore the issue.
Right. It seems like some sort of weird like transition dialogue that doesn't.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's funny. I could hear like season one Scully saying that and forgiving it because that was 25 years ago.
Exactly.
But like the irony of it is that it in her line, she says,
yes,
I can't imagine in 2016. And I'm like, I can't imagine in 2016. That's coming out of your mouth, Scully. I agree.
It's really quite ironic. It's hard to imagine in 2016 that Scully used the phrase lifestyle preferences to describe a gay person. Number one, lifestyle, no. Number two, preferences, no. So wrong and really just like out of touch, dated, and kind of to me, to a certain extent, emphasizes how shoddily, really, the LGBTQ community was kind of treated on The X-Files. Not like horrifically badly, but just kind of badly, which is badly enough. And they made some very poor fumbling attempts to introduce gay or trans characters that did not work. And there were very few LGBTQ representatives anytime in those seasons and in 25 years. And then to have a line like this, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It hurts my heart.
That's not necessarily something that would like bother me if they had gotten this right. You know what I mean? Because it shows that like they have some sort of earnest desire to be forward thinking.
They're trying.
And yet no one in the room was like, this is not the way you say this. Like, it boggles my mind. Yeah. And it's funny because I completely forgot about that until you brought it up. And I was just like, oh, yeah. Yikes.
Yeah.
So, agreed 100%. And I don't know. It's just bizarre. It really is bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
It's worse because it's coming from Scully. Like, I feel like it were just any sort of random character, I would have been like, okay, well, they don't have their shit together. But Scully has her shit together. And it's especially considering how, like, quote unquote woke they both are around season 11. I feel like there were so many differences even between season 11 and season 10 in terms of like just sort of having your finger on the pulse and knowing like the proper language and what to say it does definitely, that's not a good thing, and they should.
I mean, I remember saying on Twitter once, and this was with regard to the way that Chris Carter would refer to anything to do with the internet, and I said it's like Chris Carter still thought he was in the 90s when he was writing the revival, and I feel like that's kind of what happened here. It just feels like very 90s language.
the Chris Carter didn't even write that. Isn't that James Wong? Which makes it
it
even
is actually
more so, more upsetting.
I know, because I love him and I love his writing generally speaking. Yeah. And yeah, I just they just really screwed this bit up. And it, and again, such an easy fix. Mm-hmm. If you feel compelled to talk about this, just, you know, easy language. His, you know, his sexual orientation would have been just fine.
Right.
It's so much better than lifestyle preferences.
Yeah, you know, I even talking about this is making me feel dirty. So I'm like,
honestly, it's just easily fixed and needlessly offensive. And yeah, I kind of overlooked a lot of what the X-Files had done in terms of what they did with LGBTQ characters. And I was happy to sort of like just kind of shrug my shoulders and say, okay, not great, but not horrible. But this kind of tipped it slightly into the horrible category for me. So. Disappointing and an easy fix. So that's my number 8.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And yeah, I just like try to pretend that that didn't happen. I know that's hard.
Yeah, that's all we can do really. And you know what? It happens at the exact same moment that they're having this weird car ad moment when like they're demonstrating the features of whatever Ford they're driving.
That whole scene is stupid. Let's just
whole scene
lift
just
it out.
Needs to go. It's just stupid. It doesn't further the plot. It's all weird and off-putting. So the whole scene's gone.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
What is your number 8?
100%. Okay. My number 8, back to the truth, back to Smoking Man. Look at this. Look how all these are like moving on. Okay. Super easy fix. Don't show Smoking Man melting to the bone. How about that? How about, you know what? You've done so many ambiguous deaths, Chris Carter. I mean, I get it. Like, he thinks this is the end, I suppose, or at least he thinks it's the end of Smoking Man. Yeah. He has no idea that this show is going to come back in 15 years. I get it. So he wants us to be like, hey, he's dead for sure. Let's just make sure he's dead. And I mean, I know that's why they did it, because he's had so many fake deaths. He's had, what, like 2 fake deaths already on the show. So I get that he's like trying to be like, hey, he's really dead, guys. Guess what? He's really dead. And so, which is great, but like, if he's really dead, don't fucking bring him back. You know what I mean? Like, or at least have some sort of explanation as to why. Like, I was convinced when I saw that he was back, I was convinced that they were going to be like, oh, he's a clone, or oh, he's a shapeshifter. I that they were going to have some sort of like explanation for it, but it was nothing. It was just like, nope, just got a boo-boo when I was in the hospital. Now I'm fine. No, you didn't get a boo-boo. You blew the fuck up, bitch. I seriously was so confused when I was like, that's it? That really? He said, like, they were supposed to explain this. They didn't explain anything. So yeah, seriously, he can still get blown up by a missile. Totally fine. We just don't. We don't need that shot of him literally getting incinerated. We don't need that.
Yeah.
So lose that
you're
shot.
Absolutely right. Yeah. If you just lose that one shot, exactly. It still could have been. It would have been a pretty obvious death, but you would have had just enough wiggle room by X-Files standards that you could have brought him back without too much trouble. But
exactly.
It's like for the first and only time, Chris Carter was just determined to give the audience something clear, unambiguous, some kind of like a reward. You've all wanted CSM dead. Now here he is dying before your eyes.
But, and then 15 years later, he just ripped that away.
Exactly. If you're going to do that, then do that. Or yeah, if you're really determined to put him back in the revival, then yeah, you got to come up with some explanation that's quite compelling. There's obviously never going to be a great explanation, but you got to do better than that you did. So
yeah. And I don't have a problem with him.
That was unnecessary.
I'm actually really glad that they brought him back for the revival, because I thought it was really cool seeing him. And I feel like the X-Files isn't the X-Files without him. So I'm glad that they brought him back. But yeah, I mean, and you know, hindsight's 20/20. You can't remove the shot of him getting incinerated. But if you could, that would be my fix.
This is it. Hey, we're all about the fixes. We don't have to none of these things have to be like super practical.
Exactly.
These are just things that could be easily, it could have been fixed. And the reality is, Chris Carter, it wouldn't have been that hard to foresee that they would want to have CSM back in some form for something in the future. I mean, I'm sure that it was already in the back of his mind that he wanted to do a movie or something down the line, and that there was a good chance he'd want to bring CSM back if he had. Just, you know, keep him in your back pocket. If bloody Diana Fowler can get murdered off screen, then we don't have to have quite such a vivid murder for CSM when he's such a valuable character.
Yeah.
And I think that I agree that I was happy to see him back for the revival. And I think I was just so happy to see him that I didn't really care about how they made it happen. I was kind of happy to hand wave that away, but it really was pretty stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, it would have been easy. Anyway, you're number 7,
really,
Jen.
Lucky number 7. Okay. Okay, and I'm just going to address the complete structure of the X-Files now.
Wait, I need to take a sip of my wine here.
Everyone just take a little sip of what you're drinking right now. Wine, coffee, whatever it might be.
I'm ready.
Okay, so the basis of the X-Files, as we know it, is a mixture of some mythology episodes with UFOs and exciting shit like that. And then we have the standalone, otherwise known as Monster of the Week episodes, where monsters come along. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, they were kept very separate. If I had my way, there would have been a lot more mixing of those two types, which did happen from time to time. It happened a fair bit in the first season, which we're going to talk about a bit more as we talk about the mythology in the weeks and months to come. So episodes like Eve and Fallen Angel, they were sort of technically standalone episodes, but still had a mythology element to them. And we got back to it in the revival to quite a good effect in Founders Mutation, which I actually do like as an episode, aside from the fact that I just kind of gave it a bit of a hard time. Founders Mutation had a bit of was like a standalone episode Ghoulie. With some mythology episodes and Ghoulie. Exactly. Perfectly balanced. Mm-hmm. A standalone episode with some mythology elements. And I love those episodes. And I just like that idea of just having a little bit more of a mixture. It just seems like there were some seasons where the structure became so rigid and regimented that, you know, standalones and mythologies, never the twain shall meet. You could set your calendar by when the mythology episodes would air because it was always going to be during sweeps months. Mm-hmm. And it just, for me, a lot of the times, because I was a fan of the mythology episodes, I felt like I was just kind of killing time sometimes, just waiting for the next mythology episode to come around because the standalones had nothing to do, especially when like big revelations came along and like exciting things happened. And then we just kind of forgot about them for a couple of months and then we got back to them again. It was that never fully worked for me, especially when you're sort of watching the show in order. I didn't like that particular way. I know that's the basis of the X-Files, and I like the fact that there were standalone episodes. I like the fact that there were mythology episodes, but I just wish they could have blurred the lines a little bit more and just shaken it up and given us some surprises. You know, throw a mythology episode in when we're not expecting one.
Yeah.
Throw a standalone episode in when we're not expecting one. It just would have been more interesting, and it wouldn't have had quite as big a separation and not as much of a dichotomy, because sometimes it started to feel like it was two slightly different shows. So
yeah.
And when they mix them together, they work really well. So I would like to have seen more of that.
So I totally agree with you. I think that I agree that it almost felt like the tone of the show, and this could also be due to Chris Carter like writing all of the mythology episodes. I mean, I know Frank Spotnitz did it too. But like, I felt like we would be, you know, we'd be cruising through a few Monster of the Weeks, and then suddenly we would just take this hard right turn in tone and in drama, and suddenly everything is like the stakes are higher. And I get that, because suddenly like, hey, everything's kind of now directly involving the actual conspiracy. Like, we got to get back to the meat. I get that. I do think that they actually had quite a few, like maybe more than you think. I remember on the podcast before, back in our first iteration, when I was doing this podcast with Nick and Charlie, I think we referred to those as bridge episodes, because it felt like both, like one of each, like even something like, I don't know, I'm thinking like in the one with the bees and Skinner, I think that was like a random episode.
Oh, yeah.
And then the one in, or not the one in, but like Demons, which is a great one in season four, which is like, it's a Monster of the Week, but it's so important.
Yeah. There is like a greater element going on there too. So it's interesting.
I feel like from episode to episode though, with the Monster of the Week, where we do get that continuity and that movement is through Mulder and Scully and their relationship. So part of me is kind of like, it maybe isn't as jarring to me because I can see sort of the movement. Like, for example, you say you take like Leonard Betts, which is like a Monster of the Week, but we have this sort of huge mythology related reveal at the end.
Yeah.
And it's not a mythology episode, but like, hey, there it's there, and it's carrying through the episode. So I feel like if it's carrying through the season, I should say. So I feel like if you went one by one down all the episodes and you found the bits and pieces of mythology that lay within, you would probably be surprised But but I do agree with you. I like the idea that it could be maybe a little bit more. I don't know. I'm torn because like I talk to like my husband about this all the time, and he's always just like completely tuned out anytime the mythology is involved. Like he does.
Oh, really?
Like, no interest because he doesn't get it. He's like, he's like, is this a mythology or a monster? I'm like, oh, it's a monster of the week. He's like, okay, cool. He'll sit down and watch it because he can follow it. And so I feel like the structure that they kind of created for the show is actually pretty brilliant because it has the ability to draw somebody in without understanding the overarching mythology.
Mm-hmm.
But then as it continues on, you could kind of get hooked into it, or you could maybe kind of be like, oh, what's all this going on? This is like a bigger underlying plot thing. So I get what you're saying in terms of tone. I absolutely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the amount they have, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty good the way it is, but I do see what you're saying. And I mean, if you do, that's quite a big redo, Jen, but if you
it's
could
a big redo,
if you could, I suppose I would not be against it.
Because the times when there is something sort of vaguely mythology related that does come up in a standalone episode, like Leonard Betts, that's a perfect example where it's so effective because I didn't see it coming at all at the time because it just seems like a standard Monster of the Week episode. And so this sort of like big reveal at the end that leads into Scully's cancer arc is so impactful because of the way it's done and because it's so unexpected. So those really stand out to me. And I do love those moments when they happen.
Right.
What is your number seven?
Totally, totally, totally. Well, this is actually perfectly ordered because because we just talked about Leonard Betts, and my number seven is Air, one of my favorite episodes, Never Again, as it was meant to air before Leonard Betts. We've discussed this before in our Never Again discussion because there's no cancer diagnosis in the script. We know that it was never intended to be a result of her cancer diagnosis. It's not the way it was meant to air. So it still bothers me that was the way that they chose to air just because of football. Literally, because the Super Bowl.
It's football's fault.
It's football's fault. I mean, just because of the Super Bowl, they swapped the episodes. And I mean, in terms of getting the X-Files an audience, I will never, ever say they made the wrong choice because they did make the right choice. Leonard Betts was a much better episode to show for Super Bowl. I'm just so upset that it kind of fucked with the timeline because I hate when people think that Never Again was a result of her cancer diagnosis. That's not the truth. That's not the way it was written. That's not the way it was intended. So I would have flipped those episodes back the way they are meant to be aired. And I tell everyone until the cows come home this story because it's just because it's just not fair to that episode and what that episode means to the character of Scully. So, Air Never Again before Leonard Betts. That's my number seven.
I 100% agree. This came close to making my list as well. And because, again, it's an easy fix.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just flip the order of those episodes, it completely changes Never Again. And a lot of the sort of problems that I have with Never Again would be resolved if it had aired before Leonard Betts as it was meant to.
Mm-hmm.
And as it is, the airing order tells a certain story, even though, like you say, there's nothing within the episode of Never Again for good reason that refers to her cancer diagnosis. Because of the airing order, there's an implied connection, I think.
Right.
And so the airing order changes the story in a way that script was not meant to reflect. And it kind of messes up Never Again in a lot of ways for me. And it would have been, I would have seen it as a totally different episode if it had aired in the correct order.
Yeah.
Again, it's one of those things that like we have this amazing revelation at the end of Leonard Betts and it's like, oh my God, let's do something with this. I can't wait to see what happens next week. And then we're doing this. It's just like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
And it was a long time before I found out that there was an airing order flip. And once I found that out, it made total sense to me. It's like, oh, that's why. And the thing is that Never Again is a good show in and of itself, with its own story to tell, with its own themes to pursue, and they're completely knocked off by the where it airs because there's this undercurrent of this cancer implication that's all I wanted to know about at that point, and we're doing this instead.
Yeah.
And so in my own mind, I'm thinking, okay, there's obviously a cancer connection here, and it really messes up what is otherwise really quite a well-written episode, and I would have liked much better if I could have looked at it with its own merits. And right. So it's really unfortunate.
It kind of makes you think differently about Scully. In a bad way. I personally, and I know we're not going to get into this conversation, but like, I personally don't like the idea that she would be doing all these things that are, you know, rebellious and maybe not something she would normally do because she thinks she's dying. Like, yeah. I don't like that. I don't think that's compelling. I think it's far more compelling the way that it was intended, that this was just a natural progression of where she was in her life. Yeah. And it tells a great story as it is. And I really feel bad for Wong and Morgan, because I know like a lot of the things about Never Again didn't get to play out the way they both wanted it to. And I this was just one more of those scenarios where it's like, I remember we were talking about Darren Morgan several weeks ago about how like his, I think it was Jose Chung got bumped back because he was running late. And I think Hell Money was the one that got aired before it. And that one, I think he remembered saying that that one suffered because they suddenly had no time, because they flipped the airing order. And I mean, again, we got Jose Chung out of it, which was a fantastic episode, and Hell Money is not a good episode. But it was just like, how much better would Hell Money have been if it had gotten that proper attention? You know, you never know. Yeah. So this is just another one of those scenarios where I'm just like, it was done completely for money. For ratings, mm-hmm. I say when it comes down to it, it's done. It was a studio decision, and it completely messed with the story. And that's one of those scenarios that like you cannot fix. 90% of the people who watch it will never ever know that those were not supposed to air in that order. And so it just will always stick in my craw. This probably should have been one of my beefs, but I added it onto this list because I would fix it. I would, if I couldn't fix the airing order, I would fix it on the DVD. I would fix it on Hulu. I would put it into the proper order, because that's stuff they can all do. And that's stuff that they all should do. So anyway.
It's not too late. It's not too late to fix this.
No, fix it. Fix it.
It would have been because... And you're absolutely right in terms of what it does to Scully's character, because it does, for me, it's bad in two different ways. One is it's bad in the sense that it implies that she reacts to her cancer diagnosis in this way, which I'm sure it does happen, but not only does it not feel super Scully-ish, it's not reflected in any of the rest of the cancer arc.
Correct.
I mean, in the next episode in Memento Mori, she's got a totally different attitude towards her cancer.
It's not.
That makes no sense if we think that she's like girls gone wild because she got her diagnosis. Makes no sense.
No.
So that's a poor characterization right there. And number two, there's actually some really interesting, compelling Scully characterization in Never Again that gets lost because we think that her motivations are not what the writers intend us to think that they are. And what could have been really an interesting story about her character and her motivations gets completely derailed by what the audience brings to it in terms of what we think her motivations are likely to be.
Right.
And it's a quite compelling example of the power that a studio can have to really change the narrative arc of a season just by flipping the order of a couple of episodes that are both standalone episodes on their merits. And so shoulder shrug, would it have made that big a deal? Yes. In fact, it made a huge deal. So goes to show that, you know, there really is a plan when it comes to the X-Files, and this really derailed it, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We're on to number six. What is your number six?
My number six. This is one that I found confusing at first when the show aired, and over the years just started to irk me more and more, and now it's really irksome. And that is the fact, what is up with Monica Reyes? Why is her name Monica Reyes? First of all, let me just say I adore Annabeth Gish. Love everything about her. Really glad that she was on The X-Files. And why they put her in a role that has a Latina last name. Reyes is a Mexican or Spanish name, generally speaking. It is a Spanish word that I do believe means king. Correct me if I'm wrong, you Spanish speakers out there. But it's clearly meant to be a Spanish name. And in fact, there's like even a cover for the fact that Monica Reyes has a Spanish name or Hispanic name. In the episode John Doe, she reveals that she was born and raised in Mexico. They ask her, you're Mexican, and she says, yeah, born and raised. But here we have, so she's meant to be something of a Mexican character. I don't know exactly what her ethnicity is supposed to be, but it certainly implies she's supposed to be Hispanic between that Mexican background right. and her name. And yet they have cast a very white character in that role. And it's, you know, the term whitewash is one that's kind of emerged in the last couple of years, didn't exist back in the day when this was all going on. But, you know, with our sort of, I'd like to think, more enhanced awareness of casting and how ethnicity comes into casting, it bothers me more and more as time goes on. And to me, the easy fix would have been just give her a different last name.
Right.
I understand that Chris Carter wanted to name this character after a friend of his. That's lovely. It's a lovely thought.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I actually didn't even know that.
There's a woman who has an art gallery in Vancouver named Monica Reyes. Just gave her a little tiny plug. I don't know what her background is exactly, but that was a lovely gesture that he wanted to name a character after her. But no, don't do it. Not this one, because this just didn't work. Or if you were determined that this character is going to be called Monica Reyes, come hell or high water, then really you should have cast a Latina actress in that role. And wouldn't that have been nice to have a little bit of diversity on the X-Files cast, which is really quite wide otherwise. And so that would have been interesting, although then we wouldn't have had Annabeth Gish, which would have broken my heart in and of itself. So that's a tough one for me. For me, I kind of wish they had just given her a different last name. It would have been so easily done and problem solved.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did it the way they did, but it's not really cool with me. So that's my number six fix.
You know, I 100% agree. I don't even really have anything to add. Like, I think you're completely 100% right. Like, I did not know that until you just said that Chris Carter picked that name because he knew somebody with that name. I mean, at the very least, if he wanted to cast Annabeth Gish, which is his complete right, and I mean, he should have because we love her, and he wanted to use that name, you know, he could have explained it away to be like, she could have been like, I was adopted, or they could have done something.
Or it could have been her married name.
Right, or something like
that. She could have been divorced.
Yeah, and I mean, again, we probably all still would have been left scratching our heads, but like, given all the information you're giving, like, they wanted Annabeth Gish, they wanted to use this name, then at least explain it away in some way that isn't super offensive. So, because you're completely right. And I always kind of wondered that as I watched the show. But I also was just like so fucking bored watching season 9 that I was just like, who cares? You know what I mean? So,
right?
Yeah. So you're completely 100% right. And that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, no, easily fixed. So what's your number six fix?
Okay, my number six, this doesn't really bother me because it doesn't really change my head canon, but keep Scully's tattoo, okay?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you again, we're going with the Never Again theme. These all have worked out perfectly.
Nice.
I love the tattoo. I love that episode. Everybody knows I love what the tattoo represents, and I think it's important that a tattoo remain permanent because that's what tattoos are. And so
the fact that it's
just inexplicably gone, and I think twice we don't see it. I think in Fight the Future we don't see it, and then I think in Roadrunner season 8 we don't see it where it should be. I get why, for production reasons. I mean, whoever's running that episode just didn't think about it. Oh, by the way, Scully has a tattoo. We need to see it. So whatever. I can kind of fan wink that, okay, maybe it's hiding behind the shirt. Who knows? Maybe it's behind his hand. I don't know. So because we don't really know the exact location of it. They've actually kept the location of her tattoo extremely ambiguous. I mean, we know it's on her back somewhere. We assume it's in like the standard tramp stamp location, but we don't know that for sure, right? Like, it could be off center. It could be small. It could be below the waist. We don't know where it is. So I mean, in my kind of fan wank head, I'm like, okay, it's there, we just aren't seeing it. But it's just one of those things that I'm just like, even in, like, I remember even in Millennium, the episode Millennium, where they're actually talking about the Ouroboros, and nothing from Scully, like nothing, like there's not even like a look from Mulder or anything. It's like they just pretended it completely doesn't exist. And that's annoying to me because I don't know. It's annoying. I really, really wish that they had just kept it on, or at least just maybe given us the idea that it could still be there without sort of showing us that it's not there. And then I think they even asked Carter about it at some point, and he was like, oh yeah, she got it removed. No, she didn't get it removed. You don't just go magically get a tattoo removed. I mean, you can, but like, Scully doesn't have time for that shit. She's too busy getting abducted and having alien babies. She's not going to go make an appointment to go get her tattoo removed. Shut the fuck up, Chris Carter. Anyway, annoyed about the tattoo. keep the tattoo. It's there in my head, and it will always be there in my head. Done. Yeah. Bam. Number six.
That's a good one, too. I like that. Yeah, tattoos are forever. That's kind of the whole point.
Right.
And it's just, it's an easy bit of continuity to do and would have meant so much, quite frankly, if there had been some vague allusion to her tattoo at some point in the future. I would have been so happy just to have that reference. And it's yeah. something that it should have been permanent. And so there should have been some opportunity to refer to it. Like you said, the episode Millennium was kind of the perfect opportunity. It's one of those things that the lack of reference to a previous episode is screaming. It's so loud.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, I love it when they can, when any TV show can work in a reference to a previous episode. But not only is it not a question of not working something into this episode, they'd like, you practically have to go to your way to avoid referencing a previous episode in this case, which is very irksome when we as fans are sitting there thinking, we're all thinking about Scully's tattoo, but clearly the people who are paid to present the show are not. And it's just disappointing at that lack of continuity. And I think that Scully's tattoo is a perfect representative and example of continuity that's easy to keep up, but no one could be bothered to do it sometimes. And
yeah.
that's kind of, that's irksome to me. I've always kind of said and dreamt that shows like The X-Files should just, you don't even have to hire them. All you have to do is pluck someone off the internet who clearly knows the continuity of The X-Files, say, would you come and keep an eye on our continuity for yeah. us? People would do it for free.
Yeah.
People would pay to do it. I would have paid to go down on my own dime to LA and sit there in the background and say, excuse me, could you just maybe just change this one little thing? Because it's poor continuity. It would have been so easy to just to keep an eye on that stuff. It yeah. just, I do have to remind myself that at the end of the day, fans care more about some aspects of the show than the people that are actually paid to present it to us. You know, for a lot of the times, TV shows, the produce people that produce them, it's their job. I mean, one hopes that it's a passion to a certain extent, but the reality is it means something different to them than it does to us. And it's always, it can be a little disappointing to realize that you care more about continuity than the people that are actually producing the show. But that's the reality at the end of the day, and we kind of have to accept it. But it still really bothers me. And I think Scully's tattoo is a perfect example of that.
Yep, yep, yep.
Definitely.
I should point out, too, that I know people always get on my case about being canon compliant. And I am very, very much aware that this tattoo is probably not canon because it's gone. But I don't care. Because that's it exists in my head. For example, like I am considering Mulder's wedding ring canon because we see it twice.
Right.
But yet in my head, the tattoo, even though I know really it's gone, whatever, in my mind it exists because I just like it to exist.
I think that it can still exist. I mean, it's definitely canon that she got a tattoo.
I think it could exist because it could very, very easily be below the waistband,
yeah.
off-centered. We don't know the location. You know, yep. seriously, whenever you see it, it's just a close-up of, and we know the general area. So yeah. I suppose you can still, no matter what, kind of fan-wink the idea that it's there. And,
I think you can. Yeah,
I will continue to do so.
I think you're totally on firm ground with that because we there's no reference to her getting it removed. We
Correct.
All we know for sure from canon about Scully's tattoo is she got one, and that's the last we hear of it.
Yep.
So you can run with that headcanon wise in either direction. You can say she probably got it removed. You can say she probably still has it, but we didn't quite see it. I think there's equal evidence for both, and so go with it.
You are right, Jen, and
just embrace it.
Thank you. I am embracing the tattoo. I love
totally.
It.
I'm just very excited about the concept of tattoos because I just firmed up my appointment to get my first tattoo
Ooh.
On September 20th. Just want to share that with everyone that should know that Jen's getting her first tattoo on September 20th. And so I'm just really excited about the subject of tattoos today. So
please.
I'm going to get, it's not going to be an X-Files tattoo. Maybe my next one will be, but my first one's going to be one of my dog's paws and a little design. So,
Well, you have to be definitely texting me while you're getting that done. Like literally
totally.
While you're getting that done. And I will.
I will
tweet to the world that Jen is getting her tattoo.
Maybe I'll live tweet the whole thing. I should really, like, when I dropped by the tattoo studio to sort of talk to the artist, I noticed they had, like, you can, like, watch movies and stuff while you're getting your tattoo done. I totally want to be watching Never Again while I'm getting my tattoo
you
done.
You should. So. And I bet you the tattoo.
I feel like it would just be, it would be good luck.
You're going to make all those tattoo artists, like, X-Files. They're going to be like, what is this show? It's so awesome. Especially if
I think
you show
it's pretty
Never
cool.
Again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I feel like probably some of those guys probably already are. I just get that vibe from them. They seem like pretty cool guys, the ones that I met. So
Love it, Jen.
Like, just a complete aside that has nothing to do with anything except that my personal excitement that I just can't stop talking about it.
Well, I am excited for you, and I would love to hear now your number five.
Number five is, all right, this is another big one. Jen thinks big. This is about the mythology, and I might change my opinion about this as because we're talking about the mythology more now on the podcast, and we've just started doing it. We're going to go through the whole mythology and explore it more. And so I might change my opinion about this as I sort of revisit the mythology. But this is how I still feel, which is that we should have gotten a few more answers along the way with the mythology. I mean, we got a fair number of answers. We got a lot of answers in the last couple of seasons, for sure. But I feel like if there had been some good, firm, interesting payoffs throughout the series, like give us something interesting in season three, something believable, something that's a payoff, something that solves one mystery while launching another. I know that was kind of sort of done sometimes, but not really particularly well for me. I feel like that would have, instead of just adding more mysteries and adding more layers, it would have worked better if we could have just made a stronger resolution of some of the layers before we added new ones. So I think I would have liked the mythology a lot better if they had done that. I think it would have been a lot easier for sort of casual viewers to get on board if you didn't have to have watched 8 seasons or 9 seasons or 11 seasons of mythology because they just kept adding shit on top of stuff that was already there. I just would have been nice to feel like there was a payoff going, and it would have been nice to feel for me personally that there was a plan and that there would be answers and this was going somewhere. And just a few good payoffs along the way would have convinced me of that. So that's my number 5.
Well, I think you know that I'm going to respectfully disagree on that.
Yeah, I figured you would probably.
I think there were payoffs. I think there were plenty of them, and I don't want to get into that here because that's way too long for this list, but we will get into it as the months go on and we talk about our mythology.
We will, and I am open to sort of changing my mind about that, and I hope that I can kind of see it differently as we revisit the mythology.
I hope so, too. I think you will.
Okay.
I think you will, because I think the payoffs are there. It's just you have to kind of, like you said, they're not there for a casual viewer. No way. But for an invested viewer, they're there. So,
I think this will be interesting to see. This is going to be an interesting little historical record of how Jen fell about the mythology at this point. And will I feel the same after we have gone through it all and sort of revisited it? So we'll see.
Love it. I'm excited. But yeah,
all right, did you want to say something more about that?
No, real quick. All I was going to say is that I think that there are probably a lot of people out there that agree with you. But I hope one day to prove people wrong. So we'll see.
All right. Well, you can start with me. So this is going to be this. We have now a nice clear challenge before us. Yeah. Is change Jen's mind about the poor structure of the mythology and how the answers were doled out to us. So this is a clear sort of challenge of where I stand on the mythology right now. So we'll see how I feel in the months to come.
Sounds good.
What is your number 5?
All right, my number 5, it's a little bit of a cheat because I know we've already talked about it ad nauseum, but it really is a splinter in my mind. And that is the scene in Biogenesis where Diana Fally takes off her shirt.
Oh, fuck yes.
Okay, because like I said before, just lose that one action. Just lose that one. Just have her hang up the phone, cut off the scene. And my hatred of Diana Fally is decreased by like 1,000,000%. Because, I'm exaggerating. There's no such thing as 1,000,000%.
Would have been 1,000,000% for me. There is such a thing as 1,000,000%, and it would be for me.
Yeah, it's just because it's so, like you said, like we said before, it's just so deliberately provocative. You know, look, I'm no longer under the impression that Mulder and Fally didn't have some kind of dalliance during season 6. I know there are a lot of people that will hate me for saying that. I hate it, but I think it's the truth, and I'm sure that it happened. I think that she's doing it because she's comfortable in his apartment. I hate to say it. That's just what I think. But like, if that's the case, it's just such a weird time and place to do that. Like you know, do it like earlier in the season or before he's like all like incapacitated. You know, like just tell us they're fucking rather than like leave the door open for all these weird rapey possibilities. Yeah. You know what I mean? And again, I don't think that happened. I don't like. I really don't. But I just don't like the implication. Like I don't like the idea that like she's doing something untoward in that way. Because it doesn't make sense to me in any case. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that it makes sense to the character in terms of what we've been given so far. So, I mean, if there was going to be some sort of scene where we think that something's going on between the two of them, it's just such a strange place to put it. Like, you know, put it somewhere else. Put it earlier in the season. Don't put it there. You know, and I think that, like, I don't know. Do I really need to say more? We've talked a lot about this.
I mean, you could say more because I can't say enough about how much I hate that scene. Yeah. And I 1,000,000% agree with you that, again, it's just so easy to just take that out. There's no need for it. It raises too many weird questions to possibly be worth whatever shock value they were trying to bring to the table. Don't. There's just, it's another example, unfortunately, where the X-Files is a little careless with something that can imply a lack of consent. And those kind of issues are way too serious to be messing around with. Don't mess around with things like that unless you're going to fucking deal with it and be serious about it, which clearly you were never going to in this case. And this is another example of that. And it's weird. It's stupid. It's off-putting. It's everything wrong and nothing right. And so easily fixed. It's all of like 10 seconds. Take it out of the episode.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, and I'm sitting here telling you right now that I, to this day, do not believe that's what they're saying is going on. Like, I don't either. I don't think that they're saying that she's going to go back there and try and take advantage of him. I don't think that's what they're saying with this scene. But like you said, they need to be more careful with what they're trying to say. Because I think what they're trying to say is that he still trusts her.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't. I think that's exactly what they're trying to say, and that's all they're trying to say. And I think if they're going to show us a scene with her comfortable in his apartment, taking her top off, it should have been in a different scene. Like, I'm grateful that they waited the entirety of season 6 to do something like that, because, you know, season 6 is such a great season and it's all this happy MSR and everything. And we would have just ruined it if you thought that, like, there was some sort of thing going on the entire time, which I don't believe. I do believe sitting here right now, Jen, that something happened. I think something happened between Mulder and Fowley, probably very, very early season 6. Mm-hmm. And it to me explains the shift in Scully's attitude. Because, like, she goes from just mild annoyance with Fowley in, like, the beginning to, like, I fucking hate this bitch in one son, like, out of nowhere. And so, like, my brain puts something together that, like, maybe something's going on. I don't know what's going on, but something's going on. That would have been a more appropriate time to deal with that. Not here, not in this episode, not in this particular scene. And so that's my only issue. Take it out of this scene. If you're going to put it in somewhere else. It's just too confusing, it's careless, and it's inappropriate, and I just don't like it. Take it out.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's all about where they did it and the kind of implications that, to me, quite obviously, it led to, and to the confusion that to this day exists amongst viewers about what the hell is this?
Yeah,
I think for a lot of us, we just kind of... For me, I just like, boop, let's just pretend that never happened because it doesn't inform the rest of the episode. It doesn't inform the rest of the story. And so you can easily remove it in your brain and not miss it.
Right.
And which shows that it would have been easily removed from that episode and not be missed either, I think. So, just like don't do that to Jen. That's just not necessary. Like, I had to put up with Diana Fowley as it was. And then we have to do that. No, please don't. Way too problematic and so not worth it. So
absolutely.
1,000,000% agreement on that one.
Number four.
Shout out. Number four. All right. This is finally, I'm not going to give something like super complicated and heavy and huge. This is a simple fix. Season 11. Let's all imagine Scully. let's all imagine Scully at the beginning of season 11 with her glorious long wig. And then we lost it. We lost it halfway through season 11, and she just never looked quite as good. I'm generally a fan of short hair. I have very short hair myself. Scully clearly looked beautiful, long hair, short hair, but damn, she looked good in that long wig. Yeah. And I'm always sad. I understand that the long wig drove Gillian Anderson crazy, and that's why she wanted to switch to the short one. And hey, whatever makes Gillian happy makes me happy, but damn, she looked good in that long wig. And it just, I just keep honestly reimagining some of the scenes in the later episodes with Scully in her long wig, because yeah. I just think she looked so amazing, because she looked really great, actually. I mean, I think maybe Kitten is the last episode where we see her in the long wig, and she looks particularly fabulous in that episode, in my opinion. So it kind of makes me sad. It's a little thing, but it's just a lost opportunity. Couldn't they have made a better wig for her that Gillian could have stood to wear until the end of the season?
Yeah, the second one wasn't bad, but it was just so flat. Like, I mean, even like her,
yeah.
Like, I mean, poof it out a little bit. Like, yeah, I don't know. I agree
Do
with you
something.
Completely. Like,
yeah, no, maybe they didn't have to keep the long one if they had made a better short one.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, I mean, you're not going to get any disagreement with me, because I'm in love with that long wig. And I wish Gillian, if you're listening, first of all, I love you. But second, if you're listening, I wish you'd have toughed it out for the last five episodes, because we all would have loved that. But you know what, Jen? I can forgive it, because if we didn't have the haircut, then we wouldn't have gotten Mulder's wonderful line of, did you get a haircut? And then her saying, are you kidding me? Which I think was actually probably one of my favorite moments of the entire season. So, like you said,
that's true.
Cut the hair, that's fine. But I mean, yeah, I really do wish the second wig would have been a little bit, I don't know, just a little bit better. I feel like they could have done better.
It's too bad, because, I mean, we have seen Scully in like shorter hair over the years, and she always looks glorious. Now those were not wigs, of course. But I feel like there had to be a way to pull that off. But I do agree that was an awesome line and Nothing Lasts Forever.
I love it. Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, that was great. With Mulder with his glasses on. So,
Mulder in the glasses.
Almost worth it for that. So yeah, that makes me feel a little better about the whole situation, actually.
Okay,
so thank you.
Let's try and feel better about it, but I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you.
Yeah, fair enough. What is your number four?
Oh my God. Okay. My number four. Every single time I watch these episodes, okay, season four, Tunguska, Terma, okay. So good. Okay. Like probably some of the best mythology episodes ever. But we get to the very, very end, and I literally on my list just say, Krychek, dumb arm tea dunking thing. Like, seriously, I cannot stand that shot of him at the end dunking his tea with his prosthetic arm. Like, every single time I'm like, are we really doing this? Krychek, you have a functional arm that you can pick up that tea with. Why are we, like, I know they're just doing it for effect. I know it's like, it's supposed to be like a shock value or whatever, but it's the dumbest thing. I see it in my nightmares. I see his stupid arm going up and down with the tea, and I want to scream because it's so stupid. I think I've said enough. Number four, Krychek, dumb arm tea dunking thing. Done.
God, you're so right about that, though. But it looks like, you know, when I was a kid, we had like G.I. Joe, and it so looks like a G.I. Joe arm.
It's just so
it doesn't
stupid.
Even look like, it looks like the worst prosthetic in history. It's just so stupid looking.
No, I don't even care about that. I mean, show his prosthetic arm resting gently on the table while he's dunking his tea with his functional fucking fingers. Seriously, it's I can't. Like, right now, my eyes are bogging out at how dumb that is. Like, I don't know who decided to do that.
It's so dumb. And also, for me, I think the whole scene is shot really strangely, because we know already. I think we know already that he's missing an arm. I think that's pretty clearly.
Right. We saw him literally getting it cut off. Like, we know his arm is gone. Yeah.
So we already kind of, we're pretty clear on the idea. And it was just within that two-parter. So it's not like it happened 6 months ago and shock. Oh, yeah, right. He's missing an arm. We already know he doesn't have an arm. So
how they reveal? I mean, I get it. That's how they reveal that he's the one who was in with the Russian guy the entire time, that it was him. Like, I get that's the way they decided to reveal. No, I get it. I get why they... No. Let me rephrase. I get why they showed the arm. I understand that completely. I don't mind that at all. And I don't mind the reveal of, hey, let's see the arm and then let's pan up to Krycek. That's totally fine. Just don't have his arm dunking the tea. Like, just have his arm on the table. Like, that's my only beef.
The whole arm is going up and down while he's dunking the tea.
He's like one of those audio animatronics in like It's a Small World. Like
exactly what he's doing. It's so funny. I just think it would have been a much better scene if they wanted to reveal, hey, look, it's Krycek. Instead of why would you have his arm as the last shot of the scene? Why not start with his arm? And then it's like, wait a second, what's happening here? Oh my God, it's Krycek. We already know it's Krycek because he's already been talking and we've seen his face. And
oh, have we? I actually didn't watch the scene recently, so I don't know that for sure.
I watched it just recently myself just because I couldn't quite remember how the scene worked. And we already know it's him. So it's as though like the arm is shown at the end as some sinister reveal, like, oh my God, Krycek doesn't have an arm, but we already know he doesn't have an arm. So I don't know if it's like, here's a special reminder that Krycek doesn't have an arm, but it doesn't really have that much impact. It certainly doesn't warrant that weird up and down motion.
You're right, because he says his name, and then it cuts. I'm watching it right now. It cuts to his face, so we know it's Krycek. I don't want to watch this again because it hurts my soul. I'm cutting it off. It's sorry. So dumb. I hate it. Continue. You have triggered me. You have triggered me, Jen. Move on to your number three.
All right, number three. I'm going to trigger myself now because I'm going to talk again about Diana Fowley.
Oh no.
I know. I'm sorry, but to me, when I think about Diana, there's a lot of things we all know that Jen hates a lot of things about Diana Fowley, like a lot of things. But when I think about like, how could I have fixed that? What could I have done to fix it? And I wouldn't have taken her character out altogether necessarily. I see what she was meant to do. But I think to me, a simple fix would have been just cast someone different in the role. I mean, I have nothing against Mimi Rogers. I think she's a very good actress in other things. I think she played Diana Fowley really oddly. I don't think she's particularly appealing or interesting. I think if they had cast someone who had a little bit more on-screen charisma with how they played the role and just had a look about them that was more compelling, then it would have made more sense about why Mulder was so sort of drawn to her still. And I just feel like there is a wealth of actresses they could have picked from who would have been better in that role and made the role more believable and interesting instead of just weird and irksome to me all the time with her bizarre wide eyes and her sort of oddly stilted manner. I just feel like there had to be someone better. I think about like the casting in general on The X-Files, I think is excellent. I think even small roles are typically cast very well. I think you could take someone from any number of minor roles throughout The X-Files and take one of those actresses and put them in this role, and it would have been a stronger role. So I think that I would have been able to – I still always would have hated Diana. That was fated from the beginning. But I wouldn't have found her quite so personally offensive if they had had better casting in that role. So that's
who would you
how
have cast?
I feel about that.
I agree with you, but who would you have cast?
Well, I don't know exactly, but I'll tell you, for example, I think I might have mentioned this even when we were talking about Diana one time. I just think about, for example, Phoebe Green in the episode Fire back in season one. She's another of Mulder's exes, and that's an example to me of a much better cast role because she's got charisma. She seems smart. She's beautiful. She's interesting. I just think that she's a more compelling persona, someone more like that, someone that just had sort of that natural sort of beauty and intelligence, and someone who's just a naturally compelling person who also can seem slightly sinister as well. And I think that you could have found a lot of people who could have played that role much, much better.
Yeah.
And I think I would have felt completely differently about it. Like I say, I still would have hated her just because of who she was and because Scully hated her.
Yeah.
But I feel like it just would have made more sense. And I just wouldn't have found her so damn distracting all the time. I was just always distracted by the odd acting choices that I felt like either Mimi Rogers was told to make or that she chose to make. I just feel like that was just, that didn't work for me.
Right, right.
In that, and I feel like it would have worked so much better in the hands of someone else.
I think that I read somewhere Linda Fiorentino, and I think that would have been a really good choice.
Oh, that would have been great.
And again, there's no Monday morning quarterbacking this. I actually, it's funny, I've been in an act of self-flagellation, Jen. No, I've been actually working on like a story about Diana Fowley and like her history and with Mulder and kind of like what she's been working on and what she's been doing this entire time and why she is the way she is. And so in a weird way, don't hate me, I've kind of come to love Diana Fowley in a weird way. So she doesn't really bother me in the same way she used to, because in my mind, like, she's kind of, she has all these motivations in my mind that make sense. I get that, like, it doesn't matter that we really weren't shown it because we aren't shown a lot of things on the X-Files. So, like, I get that they had a past. So that's all I really need to know. I'm grateful that she and David Duchovny don't have any chemistry, because I think that would have hurt me, like, physically. So, yeah. So, you know, if you would ask me, you know, maybe 6 months ago, I might have had a different answer. But as of now, I really don't have a problem with Mimi Rogers as Diana Fowley. Like, I feel like the way that character was cast and played is kind of what adds to sort of the entire story of the fandom's attitude towards Diana Fowley and why we hate her and what, like, I don't know. So I wouldn't change it. I don't know. Call me crazy. Call me crazy. Because I just kind of love that about her, that she's just so irksome to all of us. You know what I mean?
I do. You know what? That's a pretty compelling point. That, you know, it's almost like I laugh at how much I hate her. She doesn't really, like, genuinely upset me. She just kind of sets my teeth on edge, like a really major pet peeve. But it is because she's almost like laughable in a sense. And it has,
it's like cartoon kind of character villain sometimes.
Kind of. Yeah. Like, 'cause she's so really poorly presented. I'll say that I have had the delight of reading a bit of your writing that included Diana Fowley, and I immediately liked her better in your story than I did in the show. Part of it is because your writing is always fabulous. Also because I think it's because Mimi Rogers wasn't staring me in the face. I think that
it helps.
When I'm like picturing Diana Fowley and not necessarily picturing Mimi Rogers, I can get behind her a little bit.
Right. I get it. And I think that's helpful. It's weird because when you think about her as like an entity outside of the actress Mimi Rogers, it's a little easier. And again, I mean, we don't need to keep doubling down on, like, hey, Mimi Rogers, you're awesome. We don't have anything against you, Mimi Rogers. Yeah. You're great. But
sure,
like, just
absolutely.
No matter which actress had stepped into this role, we would be having this conversation today, Jen. That's like, that's kind of what I want to say is, like, I'm not saying that your number, your beef or fix or whatever this is invalid. I'm not saying that. But I'm just highly skeptical that you would feel any differently if any other person had been cast.
I would probably just hate her for other reasons. Yeah. I just would have found other reasons to hate her. It just would have been different, probably.
Right.
I don't know. It's hard to say, but maybe it's best if Diana Fowley just exists for me in fanfic land. That's one of the wonderful things about fanfic is you can cast anyone you want to in a role in your head. So that's what I'm going to do from now on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what is your number three?
Oh, my number three. I think you're going to like this one, Jen. I think a lot of people are going to like this one. In season 9, okay, the episode Lord of the Flies. Not a bad episode. It's stupid and silly, and we're all just waiting for Mulder to come back. But there's a line in there that just sticks in my craw, because it could have been so easy for when Rocky is hitting on Scully, when he says, I don't know what he says, but she says to him, you know, Rocky, I'm a mother. That one bothers the shit out of me, because you know what? Exactly like what he says back to her, mothers are women too. It would have been so fucking easy for her, and twofold, because she could have gotten this annoying guy off her back to just say, you know, Rocky, I'm involved with someone. Like, how hard would that have been? How hard would it have been for her to say something like that, that said, I'm seeing someone, or I'm involved with someone? Like, and it would have been such a nice little, like, bone to throw to the shippers, because it's like, it's not like they're lying to us. We all know.
Yeah.
Even fucking Chris Carter knows it. Like, it's not like they're trying to pretend that they're not platonic anymore. Like, we know.
Yeah.
So, like, why
It's pretty clear.
Yeah, at that point especially. So it's just one of those things that I'm just like, really? You got a dog on mothers? Like, let me tell you. Let me tell you. We mothers enjoy getting busy as well, okay? So that is not an excuse, Scully. And you should know better. And yet again, another dumbass line coming out of Scully that I wish Jillian had said, had taken issue with. I guarantee you Jillian has taken issue with so many lines at this point that she was just like, I am done. This is season 9. I am counting down the clock at this point.
Yeah, whatever. Just, can we just do this? Let's just get this over with.
Yeah, it's just one more of those really stupid lines that I was just like, you know what? This could have been so easy, and it would have made the entire episode better if they had just changed that line. So anyway,
totally,
she should have said, you know, Rocky, I'm involved. That's what she should have said.
So true. And yeah, God, that's an awful line. I'm a mother? Seriously? Again, it's like, who's writing this
who
shit?
Who says
it's
that? Just, yeah.
It's everything that's wrong with how Scully is sometimes written, which is, you know, there's a lot more to Scully than being a mother or someone who's capable of reproducing. We know that. We see that. Most of the time she's treated that way. But then they do something like this, and it's like, do you even know Scully? Like, what is even happening here? Like, well, she's not going to say something like that. She's not. She's more than a mother. There's so many different ways she could have handled that. She could have just said, I'm not interested, or anything.
Right.
If they refused to, you know, make her relationship status official for reasons of just being difficult, then fine, just, you know, come up with a funny line to blow them off.
It's offensive to Scully. It's offensive to Mulder. It's offensive to us as viewers. It's offensive to mothers.
It really is.
It's just an all around terrible line. And
it's just terrible.
Shouldn't exist. Number three.
And I mean, how is it that Rocky is more woke about this than anyone else who seems to be involved in the scene? Like, he gets that mothers are women too. And it's like,
yeah, it's kind of,
you're
like,
right. You're right, Rocky. You're right.
It's kind of like your line about the lifestyle preferences thing. It's like in the very, very same line, you're sort of acknowledging that you're trying to be woke about this.
Yeah.
But you're not woke. You just suck.
Yeah. But I feel like you've put, like, the wrong lines in the wrong character's mouth.
Exactly.
If Rocky had said that, then okay. And then Scully could have said, you know, mothers are women too, or whatever, however you had to do that to make it work. It's fine for someone in the X-Files to say that. It's not fine for Scully to say it, that's for sure.
Right. It's just one of those moments where you're like, you can't forget that it's all men in the writing room. It's
frustrating. Screams it. It really, really does. Like, Jesus, there is so much more to Scully than being a mother.
Yeah.
We know that. And we know that the writers know that, because they most of the time write her in a really compelling way. But then occasionally they forget, and suddenly she's reduced to being a mother. Oh, please. No, thank you.
Well, I take issue with that, because I don't think it's necessarily a reduction as a mother speaking. I don't think it's a reduction. It's just, it's really a stupid, inappropriate thing to say in a moment where they could have advanced the MSR in a year where he wasn't even on the show. That's my main beef. That's my main
and they
beef.
Do, and they do generally take advantage of opportunities to mention Mulder at almost any opportunity throughout season 9.
Right.
They clearly don't want to forget about him. And this would have been a perfect opportunity for that. And it wouldn't have made us feel warm and happy, and would have improved for what me is otherwise not a great episode. But then again, there's so many bugs, and I don't care for the bug episodes.
Right.
So
we know you don't like your bugs. I get that.
Don't just like the bugs.
The
and
implication
it's not a good enough,
that
not a good enough episode.
That she wouldn't want to date someone because she's a mother is just fucking offensive. Like,
it makes
on
no
its face.
Sense.
Yeah. It's so dumb. And it's like,
it doesn't
if you're
make
trying,
sense to us or Rocky.
No, if you're trying to get some guy off your back because he's hitting on you, and you are in a relationship with another person, that's going to be your go-to excuse.
Yeah, it's very simple.
And so it's just another one of those examples where it's just frustrating. Like, are you really still trying to dick us around with this? Why? Like, there's no reason. Like, don't even do it. It's just frustrating.
There's no good reason to have it there. And there's so many good reasons not to. So, easy fix again.
Easy.
Fix. Are we up to number
two? Really quick, mea culpa.
Oh, yeah.
I actually love Rocky. That's probably like my favorite thing about that episode.
Rocky's kind of cute.
He's hilarious, and I enjoyed watching him, and he deserved better. I don't mean better than Scully, because, you know, nobody deserves Scully but Mulder. Yeah. But he should have been treated a little bit better in that episode. There we go.
Should have. If I was a single woman, I feel like I would have given Rocky a chance.
He was like, funny, and he was very charming.
He was funny, and he was kind of cute, and he was kind of charming, and he was, you know, a smart guy. So I totally would have dated him back in the day. But, you know, I'm a married woman, which is the reason I would give for not going out with him. Nothing to do with motherhood or anything like that, even if I were a mother.
Right.
It makes
sense. Yeah, just say you're seeing someone, Scully. It's super easy. Like,
There's like literally at least 100 ways. I mean, I think that most women have learned, especially women who are as beautiful as Scully and probably get hit on constantly, she must have 100 different ways of getting out of situations like that. And none of them, I'm guessing, involve the word mother. So why she chose to use that makes no sense.
Yeah, agreed. Number two.
Okay, number two. Speaking about Scully as a mother, I'm going to talk briefly about the Emily storyline from the two-part of Christmas Carol and Emily in season five. I would just ditch that whole storyline. It's a very heart-wrenching story. It's very sad. It puts Scully through the emotional mill. It puts us all through it. It just feels like it's almost too much in terms of the emotional manipulation that we as audiences go through and that Scully is put through. In terms of this child that comes into her life and then she loses, it's not worth it in terms of the payoff in the story in the long term, because it's like she never really existed after that. She's barely mentioned again, which is like irksome to me in terms of continuity. If you're going to bring something big like that, then maybe we could at least remember it occasionally. But if we're not going to, then don't do it. Don't put us through the ringer. Don't put Scully through the ringer. I mean, Scully has plenty of suffering. She's, you know, she's been abducted. She just had cancer last season. And, you know, she's going to go through the whole alien hybrid baby situation. There's a lot of Scully suffering on the X-Files, and we don't need this too. It doesn't do anything for the story. It's not worth what they're doing here. And it just seems to come out of nowhere, recede back into nowhere, whack us on the head, pull our hearts out, stomp all over Scully's heart for no good reason, in my opinion. So I would take that storyline, get rid of it, and good riddance. That's my number two.
That's high up on your list.
I know. I feel strongly about that one.
I don't. I like it. I think it's important to the story. I think it's very important to the story. I don't think that, I think taking that out would remove a lot of what we see later and remove a lot of the heft of what happened to her when she was abducted. I think definitely they could have done a lot of things better in that two-parter. I mean, as we've discussed before, I mean, I don't like the idea of Scully being sort of pushed to the side while men talk about her reproductive system.
That's another bad example.
Yeah, that's an execution. I don't like some of the scenes. I don't like the way they did it. And they really kind of tug at your heartstrings. But this is a drama show, Jen. I mean, you know that more than anybody.
I know, usually I like the angst, but it's almost too much for me in this one.
I don't know. And I disagree that they don't bring it up. They do bring it up. Later in season five, she has a really sort of heart-wrenching episode, All Souls, where she sort of deals with Emily. I don't need to hear about it anymore. This is exactly what we were talking about when we were talking about the mythology. No, I actually don't need to be hit over the head with Emily every season. No, thank you. I'm fine letting Scully deal with that privately, because I'm sure she is dealing with it privately. So I don't know. So I don't have a problem with it. I think those episodes are important to the storyline. They're not like favorites of mine. I don't go back to watch them, and when I watch them, I do feel quite depressed. But but there are a lot of episodes in the X-Files that I feel depressed when I watch, and I still think they're worthy of being there, and I think they're important to the story. So
fair enough. I think, you know what, my biggest problem when it comes to Emily continuity is the fact that They had a child named Emily in the episode Familiar in season 11, who winds up being murdered. And as usual, no one acknowledges this is the same name as Scully's dead daughter. It just seems like an obvious opportunity to mention it.
100% disagree. I don't care about that. I just don't care. Emily is a common name. I'm sure she's run into about a dozen Emilys between then and now. It just doesn't bother me. When the internet went up in flames about that, I was just like, really? Really? Yeah. I don't get it. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Nope. I was part of the flames. I was stoking. I was out there with a jerry can full of gasoline because it definitely was on my mind and distracted me. And it's like, come on, there's like 1,000 other names.
Here's the thing. Scully clearly is affected by this child being killed. Not Emily. Well, both of them. But she's clearly affected by this case. And you see it over and over in the case. They don't need to bring up Emily by name for me to make the connection that Scully's affected by this case and probably is remembering Emily. And if they had brought up Emily, 90% of the audience wouldn't have known what the fuck they were talking about. So I don't blame them for that at all. Could they have picked a different name? Sure. But like, Emily's a common name. I mean, they could have picked a million names. It just didn't, it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me at all.
Fair enough. Yeah, nope. Still bugs me. I just can't get past it. I mean, they obviously William was an ongoing storyline and throughout the revival for good reason, because that was going to be a big part of the revival. It's just, I see about how often William would get brought up after he was, you know, out of their lives. And it made sense. That's all good. And then for the number of times that happened, for Emily to never come up again, to me, that's where the contrast is. And it's almost, absolutely, we can sort of headcanon that, you know, Scully, we remembered her. And there is that episode, All Souls, within the same season. But it's just, I think it just would have been, to me, it just feels as though that Emily has been forgotten. Whereas, you know, William was remembered. It's as though Emily never happened. That's what it feels like to me. So I guess that's where my problem comes from. So that's my issue.
It's funny. I find it funny that like you, the non-parent of this podcasting duo,
I know,
is having an issue with this, where I'm just kind of like, I think comparing Emily and William is like apples and oranges. Like
it is.
I mean, I get they're both children. I get it. But like Scully had no connection to this child. I mean, other than the fact that she was she was his little. I can't get my pronouns right. She was her biological child that she found out, like, you know, and she knew her for what, like 2 or 3 days. And I'm not saying that yes. should take anything away, because, you know, your child is your child. I understand. But I think bringing Emily into the storyline later, especially after we've introduced William, would have just confused things and would have made.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's just. I don't know. I can't explain why it doesn't bother me. It just doesn't.
That's okay. It's okay. I can't explain why it does, but yet it does. So it is kind of a weird thing that, I'm usually not the one that's as bothered by sort of child-oriented storylines because I don't have kids. But there's something about this one that irks me. I don't know what it is, because usually when I watch sad episodes of The X-Files, it fills me with angstastic joy because I just love the angst. And that's true of almost every episode of The X-Files that's sort of ostensibly sad. I mean, I love the cancer arc, for example.
You know,
but for some reason, I don't know what it is about Christmas Carol and Emily. They genuinely make me feel unhappy and depressed at the end. There's something about that two-parter that really gets me. And I can't really quite explain what it is, but there's something about it.
I agree with you about that.
Really hopeless.
I agree with you about that, because it's not one that I ever like look forward to watching again. And I don't watch it very frequently because it is just very depressing. But I think I figured out what the difference is. I think the difference is with William, he's still alive and he's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that he's in the forefront of their mind and they're thinking about him. They're wondering where he is. They're wondering if he's thinking about him. With Emily, you know, she died.
Yeah.
So Scully grieves her. She's given an entire rest of the season, because Emily was very early in the season, to grieve her. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that season has an entire episode dealing with the grief of this child that died mm-hmm. earlier in the season. So I guess in my mind that how they dealt with Emily is kind of proportional to sort of the importance that they are giving her in Scully, yeah. in Scully's world. Whereas the importance that William is in her world is just a completely different animal in my mind.
Fair enough.
So I guess it's just to me in terms of what we're, I mean, we're not talking about real life. We're talking about a TV show. I hate to be like that bitch.
I'm not sure I can tell the difference.
But I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's proportional in terms of storytelling. Yeah. How we've dealt with it and then how we've kind of left that behind.
Yeah. I think that part of the reason why I struggle with it a bit is within the episode, Scully is so attached to Emily and really genuinely seems to see herself as Emily's mother and becomes very involved and very attached very quickly, which, you know, I'm not going to question in and of itself by any means. I wouldn't question parental attachment under any conditions. But it seems like that sort of like incredibly strong bond that's represented within the episode seems out of proportion with sort of what happens after the episode. I think maybe I'd feel differently if she hadn't been quite as sort of attached to Emily within the episode and bonded with her, which seemed a little weird to me at the time. But again, like, I'm not a mom, so I don't know how these things work. But she was so almost like obsessed with Emily.
I think the purpose to
sort of drop her after that seemed a bit weird, I guess.
I think the purpose of this, of these episodes too, are to remind us that Scully is a person who wants children.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people forget that. A lot of people think that Scully wanting children just came out of the blue. And I hate that when people say that, because it's not the truth. I mean, we've known that Scully has been wanting children, I would argue, since back till season one. Mm-hmm. So this is not something that came out of the blue. I feel like this is sort of to serve to remind us this is something she can't have, and to sort of it's upsetting and disturbing. But like, I feel like that's kind of the purpose of these episodes. I have a question for you, though. I have a question for you, because I just thought of an interesting comparison. I'm going to compare Emily to Samantha for a moment, because in Closure, Mulder finds out Samantha's dead. Okay. I know what your thoughts about that, how it wraps up, ours mm-hmm. differ and the way we think about it. But in terms of Mulder's dealing with Samantha for the rest of the series, how mm-hmm. is that any different than this? Because Samantha's never brought up again, and yet nobody cares. Nobody
you
talks.
You mean after season seven, she's never brought up again, you mean?
No. In terms of Mulder grieving and needing to mention and needing to deal with this and needing to talk about it, nobody talks about it again. It's not something that's brought up. And yet everybody talks about Scully needing to grieve Emily until the end of time. And I seriously hear this, and I don't understand why it's different for one and not the other, especially given the fact that Mulder's, that we are far more attached to Samantha than we are to Emily in theory.
Right.
And yet that's never an issue. No one is like, well, you know, why isn't Mulder still crying about Samantha? Because people are allowed to grieve and move on.
They are. And I think at that point we'd had seven seasons of Mulder grieving Samantha, and we were given something.
No, he wasn't grieving. He was looking.
Okay, I suppose.
And that's
comparable
to William and Mulder and Scully looking for William, or knowing he's still alive out there, or hoping he's still alive out there. So it's not about grieving for seven seasons.
Right.
I mean,
I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, what you're telling me is that you expect Scully to still be grieving Emily 20 years later on our screens. And I don't think that that's what we need to be seeing. I just don't see it.
I don't think we necessarily need to see her grieving. Oh, God, I hope not. That would be terribly sad. I think it's more a question of, I think probably I'm not really seeing it necessarily from the point of view of what makes sense emotionally, so much as for me as kind of a greedy TV viewer, and like, I want things a certain way for myself. And like, for example, with Samantha, we'd had seven seasons of Samantha, and I was kind of like, I was personally ready to move on at that point. And so it honestly never really occurred to me that we should have seen more of Mulder grieving Samantha, although it makes perfect sense. You make an excellent point. But at the time, and honestly, I kind of had just had enough of Samantha at that point. So I was ready to be done with her, even if it didn't necessarily make the best emotional sense. So that, I think that's maybe why that didn't bother me. Whereas like with Emily, it seemed like it was like an episode and a storyline with a big impact that came and went really quickly. Aside from All Souls, that's a good point. I just wanted there to be some reference just from a story perspective, just to kind of acknowledge that this was a big thing that happened, instead of having this big thing that seems to kind of come out of nowhere and then disappear almost as quickly. And I just would have felt better if there'd been just some kind of, I would not want Scully to be grieving her necessarily, but just some reference to her at some point in some way to kind of make it feel more like it was like organically part of the whole series. To me, the Emily storyline doesn't feel like it fits very well in the whole series. It feels like it was just kind of thing that was rammed in the middle of season 5, and they didn't quite know what to do with it afterwards necessarily. And it doesn't feel like a storyline you should do that with. Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess, my problem. Whereas Samantha, obviously very organic to the whole series, that worked well, whereas, you know, Emily, not organic to the whole series in any way, shape or form. And like you say, absolutely, it's I'm very happy that they did mention her again later on in All Souls, but again, that was just like one episode by itself, not throughout like sort of the whole season. Would have been a little better, I guess. But I guess it doesn't feel like it fits. It doesn't feel like it fits with the overall story arc.
That's fair enough. My only counter argument to that would be that I feel like a lot of the X-Files episodes feel that way. Like they kind of come out of nowhere, and then we go on to something else, and then we don't talk about it again. And I feel like they do that constantly on this show.
You're right. You're right about that. Absolutely true.
It's jarring when it's something that's really so sort of traumatic and emotional for Scully, and I get that. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just par for the course, so it fair doesn't enough. Stick out. And I agree with that. I don't really care. I don't care about those episodes too much. Like they don't stick out in my mind as ones that like really bother me, just because like you said, I don't tend to rewatch them because they just kind of make me sad. But I get what you're saying. It's not the kind of thing that sticks out to me as like, I don't know. I felt like they dealt with it appropriately, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. I can see your point as well. I think that you've made some very solid points on this regard. Well, what is your number two?
Well, thank you. My number two, a little more lighthearted one, a little more fun.
Thank God.
I think that they should have had more casual Scully. It really drives me crazy when she's like walking around to places like where that should be casual, but she's like wearing her work clothes. Like it really bothers me. I don't like when she's like wearing her heels inside. Nobody does that. I mean, it's just more examples of like men in the writer's room. Like, no, she needs to be wearing this and that. I hate it. I don't like she's wearing shoes, or like if she's at home and she's wearing a bra. Take your bra off when you're at home. We all do it.
Or she's still wearing like the suit that she had on all day while she's like typing up her case notes.
Yeah. I loved how in season 11 we got a little bit more casual Mulder and Scully. Like throughout the whole season, it was really great. I loved it. I mean, they looked great when they needed to, and they looked more casual when they were at home. Like I loved that. They just didn't do that in the original series. It's really annoying. I mean, I remember like in Milagro, she's hanging out at Mulder's house and she actually like takes her shoes off. And I remember thinking, wow, she took her shoes off. And I shouldn't be thinking that, because it should be natural for her to take her shoes off.
Yeah,
like, and don't even get me started on all her post newborn apparel, because we've already talked about that. But like, it just really annoys me. I wish Scully had more opportunities to dress casually when she needed to. So that's my number two.
Excellent, really great point. I totally agree. It's a precious thing when we see casual Scully. We saw a bit of casual Scully in the pilot, as I recall, when she's in the motel room at one point.
It's
when
so cute.
When Mulder's inviting her for a run, she's very casual and adorable.
Yes, why didn't they do that? They always had her in her like her suit in the motel room. Like, no, you're gonna put your sweats on. You're gonna like, oh, it's so cute.
And she looks adorable when she's like, like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I totally agree. It's my honestly my favorite thing, I think, about the episode RM9 blah, 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 in season 11
yeah.
is Casual Scully yes. and Scully specifically in sneakers, because I feel like that might be the only time we ever see that.
Yeah.
And she just looks so cute in that sort of little outfit that she's got going on with her sort of casual outfit and her sneakers. I mean, that's the way I dress. And so it just makes me happy to see Scully dressed that way. And she looks awesome. And I love it. And of course, written by women, they know how women would actually dress when they want to be relaxed. And so happy for that. Yes, we can never have enough Casual Scully. She looks amazing in everything she wears. Let's just put her in some different kinds of outfits.
Yep, totally.
100%, 100%. Is it time for number one?
We are down to our number one, Jen.
Boom! This is, speaking of the revival, there were some significant problems with the revival. I think that most of us would agree on that, although I dearly love the revival, generally speaking. But the problems that I have with it personally are connected to the episodes that have struggle in the name. And so really the mythology episodes throughout the revival, I have a lot of issues with. The first one, not as much, but my struggles 2, 3, and 4, I have some significant issues with them, as do a lot of fans. I feel like the mythology could have been improved. I imagine if only we could have had Frank Spotnitz back for the revival. Because he did not come. I'm guessing he has bigger fish to fry. He's on doing his own thing, and he's successful and has great series coming out. And I love you, Frank, and I'm happy for your success. And he's such a good guy, isn't he? He's so nice on Twitter and really gracious with fans.
Yes.
And just a really, really good guy. And he was very much involved in all of the mythology episodes throughout all or most of the original run of the series. And I think that we have a pretty good sense that Frank has a good handle on Mulder and Scully. And he's co-written a lot of really great episodes. And I feel like Frank could have improved those mythology episodes in the revival if he had been around, just because of the kind of things that he has said and the kind of work that he has done. I feel like when Chris Carter was left to his own devices, he maybe just went a little off the rails.
Yeah.
And if Frank had been around, I kind of imagine that maybe things would have been different. Maybe not. I don't know. But I sure would have liked to have seen Frank involved, because I admire his work generally, and I feel like he could only have improved things if he had been around for the revival. So just somehow get a private plane to wherever Frank Spotnitz is, fly him to L.A., do whatever you got to do, just get him there somehow. So that's how I feel about Frank Spotnitz, and that is my actual number one, because I actually feel like that one change could have changed the entirety of the revival. So that's my number one.
Absolutely agree with you. I think Frank makes everything better. I think that you're...
Doesn't he?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think, honestly, I feel like, you know, I don't have a problem with most of, seriously, the rest of the revival, I think, was fine. I feel like it's just the struggles. I mean, with a few exceptions. I feel like it's just the struggles that were the problem. And Frank is good with the mythology. I feel like all the mythology episodes that have him in the writing credit are better. And I think maybe it's the fact that, Chris Carter, he just needs somebody in there to be, to tell him no, to just say, don't do that. And I feel like Frank would have been there to do that. Again, I don't know their dynamic. I don't know their relationship. I don't know them at all. But I just feel like, just from what we've seen in the past, the mythology episodes are better for having Frank attached to them.
Yeah.
So I do wish that he had been around for the revival. I mean, it would have been fantastic. I think we probably wouldn't have gotten a lot of the things that piss people off. Agreed. 100% wholeheartedly.
All right. Great. Okay, what's your number one?
My number one, I think you're gonna like this one. Fix the lighting. And I'm gonna say on Kisses in particular. I mean, seriously, I'm one of those people that I'm just like, look, I love all the kisses that we got. I think that we should have had one in season 11. But other than that, I think that the amount we got is perfect and they're all fantastic. I love them all. My only beef is that we can't see them. So if they had lit them, particularly the one in The Truth, even the one in Triangle, I mean, it's just like... It's like, hey, we're going to give you a kiss so they're kissing, but you can't see it. Like, it's really bizarre. It's just such a weird choice. I mean, I'm so grateful for, like, you know, Millennium and even Existence. And I Want to Believe, particularly, like, we have some really nice, well-lit kisses. But seriously, just go back, crank the lighting up, make a lot of fans happy. It wouldn't have been that hard. Fix the lighting, number one.
I totally 100% agree. It does kind of feel like some kind of a weird passive-aggressive move. Like, okay, you can have a kiss, but you're not going to get to see it. It's like, what is happening? Why is it happening this way? This is one of the things I love about Twitter and social media and the internet today is the wonderful proliferation of GIFs. And I've seen lots of great GIFs of the kiss in The Truth. And the wonderful creator of the GIF has amped up the lighting in the GIF so we could actually see it.
Yes.
So thank you, GIF makers, for that. It's made me love that kiss even more than I already did. I mean, it's probably maybe my favorite of the kisses. It's a great kiss. And when you can actually see it, it's even better. So... thank you, people that have tried to rescue that and make it better for us. I appreciate it. And what a waste of like some really great kisses, because damn it, those are hot kisses. Yeah. Mulder and Scully are hot kissers. And it's tragic that we're not allowed to see them in all their glory, and really a super easy fix to make. So 100%, 1,000,000% agreement on the lighting specifically of the kisses. Because there's no need for that. You have skilled people here. Yeah. You can make this work.
You have professionals. Come on.
Come on. All right.
Cool beat. All right. This episode's running very long, so we're going to make these last things pretty quick. But we each have an honorable mention very quickly. Something that maybe didn't quite make the list, but we wanted to mention. So what's yours?
Yep. Mine is, this kind of came up in our discussion, and it's about Zine and Zeit and closure. And we've talked about these episodes before. I have some issues with them. My biggest issue essentially being that the story of Samantha should have had a bigger ending in a sense. And I feel like that could easily have been solved if Zine and Zeit and closure had been either a season premiere or a season finale. Just move them to one of those slots. I mean, I don't know how to restructure the season to make that work. I'll let those guys figure that out. But if they had made it a finale or a premiere, I would have recognized it for the big story that it was. I think the fact that it was in the middle of the season, just in my head as a viewer, just somehow lessened the importance of it. And I think it's partly why I didn't believe that was really the truth about Samantha for a long time.
Yeah.
If they had just moved it to a different slot, I think I would have, it deserved its own like special highlight spot as a premiere or a finale for a storyline that big. So I would have made that fix. That's my honorable mention.
That's a really good one. I think the same could be said for like Two Fathers, One Son, who that was like
kind
of very huge mythology moment that just kind of plunk in the middle of the season. That was a little
absolutely
strange.
Yeah, 100% agree on that.
Really good one. I like that a lot, and I agree with you. I don't know where they could have put it with the season.
I don't know either necessarily. But they would have had to make quite a few changes, but like I say, they're paid the big bucks to figure that out.
Yeah, but I totally agree, and I think you're right. Mm. And again, like I didn't watch it through live, as we've said before, so I didn't have that feeling that you did, but I can completely understand why you had that feeling and why others might have as well. So good one.
All right, what's your honorable mention?
My honorable mention, you know, it's really simple. Just seriously, season 11 was so good, it hurts my heart that nobody watched it. So what I would have done, well, I would have removed My Struggle 3 altogether, but I would have swapped the airing up of, I would have played this first in season 11 because I feel like if season 11 opened with this, so many more people would have watched it.
Yep.
So that would have been my fix.
That's a great fix.
It wouldn't have worked in terms of the plot, the structure.
I don't even care. I don't even care because this was such a stronger episode. And absolutely, if the studio was going to ever mess around with the order of episodes, they should have done that.
Yeah.
Because it would have, I think you're absolutely right. It would have made a genuine difference to the ratings of the season. Because if that's the start of the season, My Struggle 3, then I can't blame a lot of people for bailing after that because glad we stuck it out, but I can see why a lot of people didn't.
Yep.
So excellent, totally agree.
All right. Finally, think we can make it in under 2 hours here, Jen. If we try, we're going to each do a hot take.
Hot take.
Lay it on me.
All right. Hot take, Annie. This almost made my list of fixes. So I'm going to ask you what you would have done. Skinner, beard for the whole series or no beard ever? Would you have changed his facial hair?
Yep, give him the beard.
For the whole thing?
Yep.
That's exactly what my fix was going to be, actually. That almost made my list. I actually wrote it down. Just give Skinner a beard for the whole damn series because he looks so good in one.
I like that. And I think it would have given him a little bit more. It would have given him like a more of an authoritative air. And it like people wouldn't have gotten those weird like Scully Skinner vibes, which I don't like. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would have been hotter. So maybe they would have. But like he would have had that sort of more mature, older. I like it.
Yeah, maybe a more of a fatherly vibe even. Yeah. So, yeah. Yep. All right. Great.
Love it.
That's an excellent hot take.
All right. My hot take. Oh, you're going to like this one, Jen.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Three choices.
Oh, God. Okay.
Mulder in a white T-shirt, a gray T-shirt, or a black T-shirt.
I'm going to say gray T-shirt.
Ah, me too.
Can I have a write-in candidate?
Sure.
My write-in candidate would be gray tank top, as seen in Plus One as well.
I do love that, but I don't think for me anything tops the gray T-shirt of the
truth. Gray T-shirt, though, is classic. Mwah, chef's kiss for the gray T-shirt.
I have to tell this story very quickly before we sign off. When me and some friends, we went to one of David's book signings last year. Oh, geez. This is kind of embarrassing. And he had on like a hoodie or something.
Yeah.
And like we're about like, I don't know, 5 or 6 rows back. We're not very far from him. Okay. Ooh. And he suddenly like it gets a little hot. So he takes off his hoodie or whatever. And he's wearing a gray T-shirt underneath. And I'm going to tweet out this picture that my friend Crystal took, which was amazing. I literally could not stop myself from saying, oh, sweet Jesus. I said it out loud and people looked at me and I was like, oh my God, I need to shrink down. And I don't think he heard me, thank God. But I was like, I had this sort of visceral reaction to like Mulder in the gray T-shirt. It was very, very, very nice. Anyway, I had to say that.
To see it live, what a gift.
The majority of our listeners will probably enjoy that.
Man, that's woo! I'm getting hot just thinking about Mulder and the gray T-shirt right now.
That being said, all of the T-shirts are fantastic, but yes,
they are.
If I have
they
to pick one, definitely the gray one. Nice hot definitely. Take, Jen. I love it. The Skinner with the facial hair and the Mulder. Yeah. I like the direction that these hot takes are going because they're definitely hot.
Yeah, we had a couple of hot takes this week.
Love it. Anyway, okay, well, we've gone on just about 2 hours. We've done a great job with these. Good job, Jen. I'm not as angry as I was talking about the beefs. I don't know why. I felt like this was a lot more humorous, I think.
This was, yeah, we had a good time with this. I thought yours were really excellent selections, Annie. I'm glad that we weren't both trying to like completely reimagine the whole series. Right. So I think we had an excellent balance.
Yes, and I think yours were great too. A little bit probably more critical than mine, but you know, that's par for the course. I love it. I dig it. If you guys want to let us know what you would have fixed, you know, let's try and keep it in 280 characters, people. tweet at us at XFD Podcast. We'd love to hear from you guys. And until next time, I guess we're signing off here. We'll see you for the next episode of X-Files Diaries. Bye.
Bye.